It's episode 140 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirtier. As the name suggests, we'll be talking about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Gifted and Trainspotting 2, and we'll also be talking about the trailers for Thor Ragnarok and a little film called Star Wars The Last Jedi. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com. Or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com. Or look us up on YouTube and iTunes and subscribe. Or head on over to Facebook, search for The Hodgepodge Podcast, and like our page. As we start here, we want to send an extra thank you again to the guys at the Name Redacted Podcast. We recorded with them last week. Did an episode for them, an episode for us. And we want to thank Alex and Colin for having us out to the compound.
Appreciate that, guys.
It was a lot of fun. It was a good time. And hopefully it will mean future collaborations. Because, you know, it's always good to get out and talk to other people. Talk to new people. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Good times. At the box office, the Fast and the Furious 59 is cleaning up. It's cleaning up. It beat Star Wars The Force Awakens global opening weekend record, if you can believe it. And I think the reason why they said is because Star Wars opened like a week or two later in China, whereas Fate of the Furious was exact day and date in both regions. So that's why it made like almost $600 million in a weekend.
What a ridiculous franchise to be making that kind of money.
Yeah, they make a ton of money. And I know you and I don't get it, but people seem to like those movies. I was reading an article.
It just makes no sense. It's like, hey, we need a top secret operation for this plan to go through. I know. Well, let's hire these rogue band of drivers. That's right. They're drivers and car thieves. Jesus Christ.
I read an article on Collider today, and they were basically like, you know, the series would actually be really good if they kind of shifted it over to Dwayne Johnson and gave him the lead, because they're like, Vin Diesel's character story is kind of played out. So, and he's apparently like super serious in these movies when like, they're like, it's basically a fucking cartoon.
Yeah. It's not really fair for me to fully comment, cause I haven't seen any past the second one. I was like, fuck this shit. But
right.
I don't get it. Yeah. I don't get it. And I will be abstaining from Transformers 5. This summer too, because I don't get that either, and I'm done.
I haven't decided what I'm doing about that yet. Maybe
a solo podcast.
What?
A solo podcast.
Maybe I'll wait a week or two and then use one of my free passes I have for AMC and go then.
Admittedly, I just don't get Genius.
Yeah, right.
I just don't get it.
This past weekend was Star Wars Celebration in Orlando, and once again, as we watched a couple of the panels, we were like, fuck, we should have gone to that.
every time. Say that every time.
It was the 40th. This year is the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. May 25th will be the 40th anniversary. And so they had a nice panel. A bunch of people showed up. Harrison Ford was there. Mark Hamill. George Lucas was there, which is kind of surprising, actually, considering how much shit he's talked to Disney.
Yeah, Billy Lord was there.
Billy Lord was there representing Carrie Fisher. And she's in The Force Awakens, too, but she's a
big part. Yeah, very,
And they did a nice, a beautiful tribute, I would say, to Carrie Fisher. It was really nice. You can catch that on YouTube. You can catch all the panels.
Yeah, like a three-minute little vignette.
But all the panels, I think it's on like a site called a page called the Disneyland Experience or something like that. So they have all the panels there. Billy Dee Williams was there, and Hayden Christensen was there.
Who will not be in the last, or in the...
The next one. The Last Jedi. Yeah. So he says. So he says.
Yeah.
Who knows? Speaking of The Last Jedi, they did release the trailer, finally, the teaser trailer. And it's very similar to the Force Awakens teaser in that it doesn't really show you much.
Tonally, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you see some X-Wings fly by, you see some other, you know, assorted vehicles and people shooting at each other, but it's not even, you get zero exposition or
right
or intro into the story itself. It's right. just a bunch of action shots.
They but I mean, it, like, even like the beats are the same as the Force Awakens trailer, because like Force Awakens trailer opened with that long view on the desert, and then Finn pops up, and this, it's a long view on like a cave floor, which at first looks like a star field, which is really cool, and then Rey's hand comes in, and then they, right. they pan up to Rey, and she's like obviously going through her training or having a baby, one of the two.
Sexist.
Well, she was all sweaty and breathing real heavy and stuff like that. I don't know. Maybe she's pregnant. I don't know. We don't know what she and Chewie were getting up to in the Millennium Falcon.
The hairy bear.
Yes. Although he likes the doctor who was helping his own. If you've watched Bad Lip Reading, Chewie's trying to set that up. but no, the trailer was, it was cool. I liked it. It's very, the last line is very ominous. It shows, you don't really get a clear look at Luke Skywalker.
Well, I mean, the title itself is ominous.
It is, yeah. It is, yeah. But you don't really get a clear look at Luke. He's mostly in far away shots and from behind and shadow.
To the end, you get the pretty clear look of
him. Not really.
When he turns around.
Yeah, but it was in the shadow. He was in the shadow.
You see his face.
Yeah, barely. Didn't see any real new characters in this trailer. It's basically, you just see Rey, Finn. Finn's in a healing pod or something like that. That's all you see of Finn. You see Poe Dameron, Kylo Ren. There's a scene where there's like a burning building. People think it's a Jedi temple. And then marching through the fire, you can see Captain Phasma and her stormtroopers are coming. It basically shows some training shots of Rey learning under Luke. There's some space battles. There's a really cool planet called Crate, I think, or something like that, or something like that.
Right, the mining planet.
Yeah, and then like as these resistance fighters are going over the surface, they're dragging some hooks or something like that to kick up this red dust. I'm guessing to obscure the view of the AT-AT walkers, which are in the horizon. I don't mind them putting AT-AT walkers in it, but it's kind of like The Force Awakens, you know, has gotten so much flack for having a lot of similar story beats to the original Star Wars. And then if you're going to have the AT-AT walkers in the second movie, it's like...
That's like they said, there's limited scope to Star Wars.
Yeah, that's what Red Letter Media said. You know, that's what Rich Evans from Red Letter Media said. So maybe that's what it is.
And that's what people want to see?
I guess. Disney's
going to give the people what they want to see.
Yeah, because apparently we're two of the only people on the planet that hated Rogue... Or not hated, but, you know,
yeah,
we're
just it.
Disappointed
just, yeah,
by
disappointed.
Rogue
disappointed, yeah.
Because a lot of people are like, it's the best. I'm like,
yeah,
you're crazy.
This is the best Star Wars ever. Like, what the fuck are you talking
crazy.
About?
You're crazy. Oh,
Jesus.
I still stand
like,
by
not, it. Not a single character in there is fleshed out. No developed characters in that movie whatsoever.
I still stand by my challenge that I want to issue to people who say you love that movie come December when I ask them, what's the blind guy's name? Tell me now.
Right.
Blind guy. What's the machine gun guy's name? Tell me now. Tell me now. And, you know, whereas my favorite character, Han Solo. It's done.
Right.
Princess Leia. Luke Skywalker. And then at the end of the trailer...
if anyone said Jyn Erso, they can go fuck themselves.
Yeah, right.
Like a piece of wood with a wig on.
Who's Jyn Erso? I call her Boring Rey. That's what I call her. Boring Rey without the Force. And at the end of the trailer, Luke has a voiceover and he says, I know one truth. And he says, the Jedi must end.
Right.
And then that's how they end the trailer. So it's pretty cool. Again, just a teaser. We didn't get to see Benicio del Toro. You don't get to see Laura Dern, who's in it. There's a new character that Rian Johnson, who is the writer and director on this, is apparently really excited about, played by Kelly Marie Tran, named Rose. She apparently is going to go on an adventure with Finn in this movie, so that's cool.
And honestly, it's a teaser trailer. B,
yeah.
I don't want anything out of trailers.
Oh, no,
This is fine. I don't want to see that much out of trailers. I mean, I wasn't excited by this trailer simply because of the barrage we've gotten over the past 3 years of Star Wars. You're not going to be as excited as when we saw the trailer for Force Awakens for the first time. Right?
Well, the nostalgia factor is gone.
But it's still a cool trailer. Looking forward to The Last Jedi. And you know, they've talked about they're already developing their next spinoff movie, which, you know, who knows what it'll be.
Yeah.
Some think it'll be Boba Fett. Which I think would be stupid. I mean, it's like, this is... Yes, he gained iconic status.
Right.
But he was such a ancillary side character and mysterious. That's why he was cool. And they've already kind of destroyed him with
the
whole...
The prequels.
Clone War shit.
The thing is like, and this goes back to like the Han Solo movie too, because they're talking about the Han Solo movie is basically going to touch on all these points in his past. I'm just like, Boba Fett would be a good movie if they just do Boba Fett on a job. That's it. It's one job.
No, that'll never happen.
And I know that'll never happen because they're going to be like,
got to tie him into everything else.
I know. We got to tie him into fucking Rogue One somehow. I mean, yeah, it's fucking, it's stupid. So it's just like, you know, you just want to take these people and just shake them. It's like, it's Star Wars. People are going to fucking show up. Just tell one good fucking story. That's a single story.
You don't have to thread every... We already know it's the same universe.
Right.
And in this universe, not everything is threaded together that neatly.
Essentially, the way they should approach these movies are the saga movies or anything that's like multi-part is a novel. And anything that is a, you know, a standalone movie is basically a short story. And that's basically how they should approach it.
But they won't.
But they won't. But they won't. So another trailer...
And eventually, I'm sorry, eventually it will get old.
It will. Yeah, it will. As much as I love Star Wars,
it's
it will
get old.
Because Han Solo's dead, so
Mark Hamill was pretty boisterous about that at the panel about how that should have happened.
Yeah, so some reporters
the idea that he didn't get to say that Luke did not get a goodbye with Han Solo or a reunion. He did not like that. He thought he thought basically he should have been at the, he and Leia should have been at the Death Star.
Yeah,
not being able to save Han as opposed to it
Rey
being
and Finn.
Big Rey and Finn.
Yeah,
but that's fine. I mean, you know, again, stories don't always work out. You know that way in life. That's how it goes.
And yeah,
we needed to introduce these new characters. I thought they did a good job of it.
No, they did. Yeah.
Rogue One, they shit the pot.
Yeah, they did. So. They did. They're all mysterious.
Yeah.
Another trailer that launched recently has now done the impossible because it's made Dirty A want to see a Thor movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Thor Ragnarok had one of the coolest trailers ever.
It's great.
They used Immigrant Song from Led Zeppelin.
As you now know.
As I now know.
Doug's like, it's
that song.
It's cool that they used the song from The Girl and the Dragon Tattoo. We're like, you mean like the iconic Led Zeppelin song?
I know nothing about Led Zeppelin. The only thing I know is Whole Lot of Love. That's the only thing I knew. And
it
like,
could
and
just
Cashmere.
Easy,
and
it
Cashmere.
Could just as easily been me saying something like that.
Right.
It,
or
it
Cashmere.
Was, it was
and
just
then,
funny.
Was, and then like, you know, and then, you know, then Matt's like, oh yeah, it Led Zeppelin. I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So it's like, yeah. But the other thing, in my defense, the other thing too is that with Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which is the first time I heard that song, they use a cover in that. It's not them.
Right.
They use a cover in
that. Yeah,
this is
the original. And it's funny, I don't know who cut this trailer, but, you know, man, did they make it very 80s. I mean, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Everything about it.
And, it's very Flash Gordon-esque.
Yeah. I mean, the font that they use, everything about
the
trailer.
And then the letters shooting in and out. And, oh yeah, yeah. It's so it's on point.
But it was cool. Yeah, it was a very nostalgic feel to it. Yeah. And the you get a little more a taste of what's going on here versus say like in the Star Wars trailer.
Right.
But not in a way that's threatening you of
spoiling the movie.
Anything.
But the other thing is too is that I think in this regard Thor needs that because Disney knows Star Wars is going to make $1 billion no problem. Thor has been
Marvel also will.
Oh no world no cuz not cuz no the
you're
the
talking worldwide.
Yeah, cuz I think the only two solo movies, but I hate to call Captain America Civil War a solo movie because it's not a solo movie. It's an Avengers movie.
Yeah.
The only solo movie to really make $1 billion worldwide was Iron Man 3.
Right.
Thor
God
does not.
Damn, that's sad.
Thor does not crack that.
Right.
Thor, and so.
Well, as it shouldn't, I'm sorry, but those first two movies.
No, of course. Yeah.
I do not. I'm not a fan. I wouldn't wish anyone to watch those movies.
The first one's all right.
Hey, I
like the
board. Bored as fuck.
All right. So the trailer features Cate Blanchett as Hela, who's going to be she's basically the Norse goddess of like death, and she is going to be the main villain in this. And she looks great. Her costume looks amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Loki's in it, of course. He shows up. They showed Idris Elba's character Heimdall fighting in like some forest or something against Hela's minions. And then Thor, she breaks Thor's hammer, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then Thor gets sent to this planet called Skaar, and he gets captured there by the people there, and then he's brought to Jeff Goldblum's the Games Master, or what, I forget his character's name. It's like something the Game Master or something like that.
Yeah, Game Master.
And by Valkyrie, who's played by Tessa Thompson. They show like a clip where like the Valkyries were fighting Hela and they lost, so that's going to be her, you know, hook to get into the main story probably. Thor gets thrown into an arena, basically.
Yeah, gladiator-esque arena.
Right, they chop his hair off, so he's got short hair now. He gets thrown into an arena, and Jeff Goldblum goes, and now it's time for your Incredible, and busting out the other side is the Incredible Hulk. And Thor goes, yes! He's like, he's a friend from work!
Well, he's like, yes, and then everyone stops and looks at him like, why aren't you scared? And he just like looks up and goes, he's a friend from work!
And then they start to get into a fight, and then that's where the trailer ends.
The theory is it's a fight to the death. It's a gladiator type of match, yeah. So it won't be.
The theory is also about this trailer is that a lot of this takes place in the beginning of the movie, so that they're not really giving too much away.
Right.
Because apparently what it's supposed to be, it's supposed to be like a buddy road trip jaunt across the galaxy with Thor and the Hulk.
Yeah, but no, it looked great.
It looks great.
And it did. It got me excited. Yeah. And I think they really picked the right guy to direct this movie.
Taika Waititi.
He's going to do a great job. Or he did. It looks like he's done a great job with this. And I can't wait to see the final product.
This comes out in November. The first weekend in November. I want to say it's like the 8th or something like that. Justice League comes out the next fucking week, so
yeah,
double whammy. And then Star Wars comes out December 15th. I've already requested the day off of work,
which I think is bad news for Thor.
I think so too. Yeah,
I think you'll find more interest in Justice League.
I hope so. I mean, for their sake. I hope so for their sake.
Yeah. Not right or wrong. I'm just saying. I think it will cannibalize some of the box office.
Oh yeah, for sure. Thor. Yeah. I think it also depends on how good Wonder Woman is. If Wonder Woman sucks, then people might just be like, you know what? Fuck you, and not go see it.
Yeah. Well, that's true. But even if Wonder Woman's good, it's like I think. In terms of the Marvel movie and the Avengers pedigree, a lot of people are already, that's not fair. A lot of people love the Thor character. I love the Thor character in the Avengers movies.
Right.
But as solo movies, like you said, they just, people aren't getting into them. So the fact that they've already done two, people may already be disheartened by that.
Thored out, yeah. Yeah, maybe.
But we'll see. Hope not.
We shall see.
Hope not for Taika's sake. I hope not, because he's a great director. I want to see him do more. It's a double-edged sword. I want to see him do more commercial stuff, but at the same time, he's so good at what he does with his independent films. I want to see those more too. So.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
it's kind of like Christopher Nolan, because it's like, you know, I love, you know, like as he built up to where he is now, where he's like this big blockbuster director. It's like sometimes I kind of wish, like, maybe make a smaller film.
Yeah. I mean, Memento is still one of my favorite films. Yeah. I love it.
I liked Memento. I also like the concept behind Memento a lot. But my favorite small film of his is The Prestige. Right. I love that fucking movie.
Is that considered? I guess that. Yeah.
That's yeah. Film. I mean, it's got two big stars in it, but it's really an intimate movie, small movie. All right, so let's get into these two films that we saw. There's a third movie I saw real quick. I saw the Japanese anime Your Name.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that one.
It's good. I mean, it was really good. It comes off at first as like a Freaky Friday type thing, but it's much more poignant than that. Much more poignant. The story is much more somber. But it's very interesting. I'm not a huge anime fan, but ever since all this Ghost in the Shell stuff and stuff like that, I've been kind of like getting into it a little bit more.
I just can't do it.
It's tough. I'll
wait till video. That's not my style.
I gotta be honest. It's really hard. It's really hard watching it in the theater because it's all subtitles.
Right.
And then you're like reading but you're trying to look at the animation too, because the animation is beautiful in this. And the director was Makoto Shinkai, and it's really good. If it's playing in your area, I recommend it. I don't want to delve into too many spoilers. I'll probably have a review up on the site soon. I've just been busy, but it's good. I really enjoyed it. So let's talk about Gifted. This is a movie from Mark Webb. He of 500 Days of Summer and the Amazing Spider-Man films fame. And this is the first film he's directed since Amazing Spider-Man 2. He's been directing some TV stuff.
He needed to hide us after that.
He did. That movie was terrible. Amazing Spider-Man 2 was 2014. So this is like three years. I mean, I guess that's okay, I guess. But I'm sure he was expecting to be doing another Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I'm saying it's okay. It's nothing wrong with it by any means. But this isn't like some big movie that's been in production a long time. This is something any director could have really jumped in.
Right, yeah. This is very much more in line with 500 Days of Summer, where it's a very small movie, very intimate.
Yeah, I won't say this is like a paint-by-numbers movie, although it seems that way. But it's at least enjoyable for the most part. It's harmless. It's a benign movie.
Yeah.
Little better than you might think going into it.
There's a lot of easy plot devices in this.
Sure.
As you were pointing out about Chris Evans' character. Like, why is he doing that?
Yeah.
And I kind of figured out why maybe he might have been doing that. Because I think
I think I did too. It's because she didn't know at the time, the mother.
Right.
We're delving into it. The kid was smart.
Right.
But as soon as Chris started realizing the kid's smart, that's when he knew the mom would want.
Exactly,
to,
right.
To,
but
to
also, plumb but on also, if he was a professor still, it would have made him easier to find.
True.
And if
but it's still stupid. I'm sorry. It's still that part of it is still stupid. Anyway, let's explain to the audience who's now lost what we're talking about.
So Chris Evans, Captain America, plays Frank Adler, who is a boat repairman guy in Florida. And he is raising his niece, Mary, who's played by McKenna Grace, who's great in this movie. She's really good. And basically you find out that Mary is a mathematical genius, basically. And you come to learn that Frank's sister was the same way. And you come to learn that Frank's actually really smart, too.
You come to find it's basically in the genes.
It's in the genes of the family.
The gene pool is a smart, gifted family. Like Royal Tannenbaum-esque genius.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, it is like that. It's just a little odd.
Like everyone's smart. Like, okay.
I guess so. I guess their dumb brother though was Owen Wilson. He wasn't in the family, so he was the dumb brother.
The sister, she committed suicide.
Right, yeah.
Which is how Frank ended up raising
the niece.
Raising Mary.
They lived in Boston and he basically takes the kid to Florida, and the reason why is because he doesn't want his mother to get her claws into the kid because he blames her for his sister's suicide.
It's clear, I mean, throughout the movie, especially after you meet her, it's clear, but she puts a lot of pressure on the family to succeed and really pushes them from a young age.
But also, she was a mathematician who ultimately, I guess, failed in the end. And so then I think she's kind of also living vicariously.
Sins of the mother passed on to the children.
Just like sports dads, you know, like that. The mother is Evelyn, played by Lindsay Duncan. And what happens is that Frank wants to put Mary, he believed that his sister wanted Mary to live as normal life as possible. So he puts her into a normal public school where obviously she is like light years.
Which is ridiculous off the bat. Like if you know your child, the child you're raising is that smart.
Right.
I'm not saying you have to go crazy and enroll her in college.
Right.
But clearly you're not doing anything for anybody by putting her in a school full of other 6-year-olds.
That's true. But I think it also goes back to that he was trying to keep her
off the radar as possible. You can, there are other ways to do that other than moving to a podunk island town.
Right.
And trying to raise the kid there, which clearly the kid was, I mean, smarter than Frank in that sense.
Right.
And yet she's in there with, she's bored as shit.
Yeah.
She even admits she doesn't want to be there.
Right,
you know? And he's smart enough to know. It would have worked for me had he been like, he's in this town. I don't want to say dim, but he's a normal guy from this town.
Right.
And he doesn't know any way to raise her. So this is how he raises her.
Right.
But given that he's from Boston, he's a professor.
Right.
He knows, because essentially what he wants from her is he wants her to develop socially as well as academically.
Right.
And there are other ways to do that other than not giving her the proper schooling.
Which is the solution at the end.
Right. But so it was just stupid.
He meets Mary's teacher, Bonnie, played by Jenny Slate. Chris Evans and Jenny Slate's involvement in this movie led to a romance off camera. And they have a fling in the movie. And Octavia Spencer is also in this, who plays the neighbor Roberta,
yeah,
who basically helps him out with Mary and keeps her on certain nights.
But Jenny Slate is basically she's the child's immediate teacher. She's discovered right. how smart she is. She takes it to the principal. That's how the mom gets involved.
And that's how the mom gets involved. Because
they eventually call the mom in.
And then it gets into a
grandmom, I guess we should
say. Yeah, grandmother, yeah. And then it gets into a custody battle.
Which is very odd because it's like they know the stakes. Each one knows the stakes of this custody battle in terms of what they want out of it. Yet they both seem so civil about it. It's kind of odd.
Yeah.
It's a little odd.
Yeah.
Like they're fighting for this child's life on both of them side. That's how they see it.
Right.
But they're so cordial about the whole thing.
Right.
It's almost like matter of fact that it happened.
Well,
Frank's like, oh yeah, we're going to court. Here we go.
Yeah.
But I know that's not what the movie's about.
Right.
But it was odd.
Well, she's British. So yeah. She has to keep everything
anyway,
civil.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was all right. It was a sweet movie. Like Dirty A said, it's very benign. This isn't winning any awards or anything like that, but it was fine. I mean, it was a fine.
It has some slight twist in the end you might not expect, and
yeah,
like, oh okay, and it kind of fits some things together a little more.
Yeah,
but all in all,
I don't know why he just didn't break that out in the beginning.
He was trying to.
Oh, his sister's wishes. Honor his sister's wishes. Because she said
it wasn't until
right.
the mother died, that,
right,
the grandmother
right.
died,
right.
that he's supposed to do that. But in the end, he thought, it's better for Mary if I go ahead and do this.
If
now.
I play this card now, yeah. Okay, all right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, he was doing everything he could to try to honor his right. sister's wishes with that.
Right. But yeah, I mean, it's a sweet movie.
It's fine. I mean,
the acting's fine.
I can't imagine anyone would just flat out hate it.
Right.
But there's nothing fantastic about it. It's a rental.
So yeah, some like we said, some easy plot things happen in this, but other than that,
all the acting's good though.
Yeah, it was good, and there's some humorous moments in it too. A lot of humorous moments in it. It was good. Check it out on video.
Yeah, on video.
When it comes out.
I wouldn't pay $10 to see it.
No, we sell it for free, so that's why. that's why.
That's the way to see it. That is the way to see it. If you can see it for free, that is the way to see it.
So that is Gifted. Now let's talk about a movie that's 20 years in the making. Danny Boyle has gotten the gang together again to do literally the movie's called T2 Trainspotting. And at first I'm like, T2? I'm like, it's Terminator 2. I'm like, come on.
It is, but it's not. Everyone calls it that, but Terminator 2 was not.
I think they did call it T2.
They not in the title. Like,
oh, it's Terminator Judgment Day.
Yeah,
they just
used that as in the advertising.
Thing. Right.
Yeah.
And
I think honestly, I think that's part of the play of Danny Boyle kind of being a little funny, joking
maybe,
around a little bit.
Maybe
but, that's kind of his style.
Did you
revisit the first one or had you not seen
it? I'd never seen it. Okay. Like, Trainspotting was one of those movies that I always knew of, but I never got around to watching.
I mean, I love that movie, and I was super excited about this movie coming out. I mean, hesitant as well. But,
right. Oh, yeah.
But honestly, I figured if Danny Boyle was going to go back to this story, he wouldn't do it unless it felt right.
Right.
Especially with all these actors and characters. I also feel the same way with the cast.
Right.
A lot of them, Ewan McGregor particularly, are very choosy about the roles they do. So I don't think that they would have signed on had it not been a worthwhile project.
The original, I watched it Saturday, and I saw this one on Sunday. And I liked the first one. I thought it was going to be more, because I know they describe it as like a black comedy and all this kind of, I thought it was going to be more comedy.
I didn't even know they described it as
that. Oh, yeah,
it's a straight-up drama.
And
it's got some...
yeah,
sprinklings of comedy things that happen just because they're doing right. drugs. It's a straight up drama.
I'm watching that movie. I'm like, this is really sad.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a cautionary tale. Is what
yeah,
it
yeah.
is. It's
and the end. I mean, I guess that's the only way the movie could have ended. But I was just kind of like, he's a dick. I was like, so it's kind of hard to like, you know.
He is and he isn't. I mean,
yeah.
They're all dicks. I mean, they're all, look at the, what they all did in the movie, and he was the only one who wanted to get out.
Right.
And that was the only way he knew to get out.
Right, right.
So, I'm not saying he wasn't a dick, but, you know, he needed out of the life, and that's the way he found his way out.
I mean, he killed Tommy.
He did not kill Tommy.
He did kill Tommy.
He did kill Tommy.
He killed Tommy. He fucking killed Tommy. Yeah,
that motherfucker. He killed that motherfucker. He did that shit.
So, but I like the movie. Kelly MacDonald.
God. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. She's, you know, I mean, everyone remembers it for that, the one quote unquote gross
toilet
scene when
he
dives back in for the drugs.
For the suppositories. I was like,
it was really gross.
But then when he does it, obviously he's like, you know, it's a hallucination or whatever. Sure. But then he comes to his apartment, he's still wet. I'm like, how'd that work? Yeah. Like, how's that work?
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, he his head was definitely in there.
His whole body's wet. Like, I'm like, ugh.
You get the feeling that the plumbing probably broke when he was doing it. She probably overflowed.
Who knows? Maybe.
But anyway, at the time it came out, it was very inventive. Poignant look at the drug scene.
Right. Yeah.
At the time, and I mean heroin in particular. Is what it was dealing with, and this movie being T2,
right,
could have easily been shoehorned in story, but it felt very organic.
Very organic.
It really worked. You can't really say bookend because there's nothing in the middle, but it really worked as an end of these characters,
right?
To kind of close the door on the story.
Yeah, because I would say that the first movie, because of what Renton does in the end and stuff like that, I would say that there's like really like you're just like, oh god, it's like, yeah, this is
so
terrible.
But if for some reason you haven't seen the first story, it's no spoiler at this point. 20 years later,
yeah.
You know, they come across some cocaine. It was a heroin. It's cocaine.
It's heroin.
Was it?
But let's break it down. Let's break it down. You've got the four main characters are Ewan McGregor plays Mark Renton.
Yeah.
Johnny Lee Miller plays Simon or Sick Boy.
Sick Boy is what it's particularly in the first one. He's known as Sick Boy.
Yes. And then in this one, it's Simon.
Yeah.
Ewan Bremmer. Plays Spud, and then
he's great.
Yeah, he's really good.
He's kind of the
that's his story is really why I like this one so much.
Oh yeah, well it's more his story.
Right. Yeah.
This is his story because he was always the
tag along, I guess.
Yeah, the innocent one, if you will, of the
right.
If you can call it that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Robert Carlyle plays Begbie, who is just a fucking son of a bitch.
Maniac psycho. Robert Carlyle is so good.
Oh, he is. He's great in the role, but I hate that character.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a sociopath. Just get away from that guy. Also in the original, Kelly MacDonald made her film debut playing Diane. She was like 19 or 20 at the time. She was playing a girl, apparently. I didn't know this. I read this on Wikipedia. She was 15. I didn't realize she was that young in the movie.
Yeah. And something really bad happens there. No.
Kelly MacDonald was the girl that Renton met at the club, and then he goes to her house.
Right, but wasn't the other girl at the house?
No.
That was their just their that, drug
that,
house.
That was at the drug house. Yeah, that was at Mother Superior's house.
Okay.
That was something else. That was terrible. The baby. Oh my god. Oh. And then when he's having the fucking hallucinations. Oh god. And then Kevin McKidd played Tommy.
Yeah,
who is a character who was clean, and then his because of certain things that Renton did and others and his girlfriend left him, and then he wanted to try heroin. He gets AIDS and dies.
He essentially they give him his first bump, and he
is the ultimate cautionary tale. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the arc of the first movie. Is
right
is how he comes in and how they ruin not only their lives,
but his as well.
Other lives, yeah.
But then what happens in the third act, I guess, is that Sick Boy comes across, he gets a big stash of heroin, and Renton had already gone into the city and left, and he was working at a job, and they basically say, hey, we need $2,000. And he goes, I don't have it. And Begbie's like, because Begbie crashed at his place. And he's right. like, I looked at your bank statements. I know you have it. He goes, you motherfucker. So they get the money. They get the heroin. And then basically what happens is Renton runs off with the money.
Right, right. So, well, right. And they
it was 16 grand.
Right. So they basically, they sold the heroin, got the money. And then at the end of the movie, Renton runs off with the money and leaves them all.
He
leaves them all. He quietly escapes. And as he's leaving,
Spud sees him,
and
he shakes his head like, "Don't leave."
And Renton's just like, you know, shh, be quiet. And then he leaves him his cut right. In the locker,
which apparently he didn't tell anybody about.
And then 20 years later, you come to find out Spud didn't tell anybody. But it did not. It basically hurt Spud's life more than if he didn't have the money, because he spent it all on.
Smack. It would have helped more if Renton had stayed. It would have helped his life more if Renton had stayed.
Right. And that's kind of what he comes to terms with.
So,
I don't know that anyone really comes to terms with anything, even in this movie. I mean, they're all still outside of Spud. They're all kind of still. Renton's kind of back in the life. You get the feeling.
Yes and no. Because I think. The one thing that killed me about the first movie, it's supposed to, because it's about addiction and all this kind of stuff. Every time, like, he's tried to get clean, and then when he hits again, he gets a heroin, I'm like, God damn, I'm a motherfucker! Of like, stop doing that heroin!
Very visceral. You feel for the character. That's great character-driven drama, because you care about these characters. You're like, why are you doing this?
So, it's 20 years later, and then, in Trainspotting 2, and then he comes back. He had a heart attack.
Yeah, he has some heart episode of some kind.
See, I thought he just fucking was thinking about his past, and he got distracted and fell.
Yeah, he has a heart attack, starts thinking about the past.
Right.
So he goes home.
Right.
And finds out.
But you find out a lot more about why he came home, too.
It was a...
It's surely not too far from the beginning of the movie, but...
I love the scene. I love the scene with him and his dad sitting at the table. The first scene, and you see the shadow of where the dead mother would have been, and it's just a shadow.
You know who that guy is, right? The guy who plays the father?
The father.
He's J.R. Mormont from Game of Thrones. He was the leader of the Night's Watch.
Oh, yeah.
That they betrayed at Craster's Keep. Yeah.
But that was a really great scene.
Yeah.
Actually, this movie has a lot of really great... Danny Boyle is really good at creating scenes.
And he does a great job by intercutting, splicing together some stuff from the original movie. And it's seamless. And there's one scene, and I saw it on Wikipedia, there's one scene where they run into... it's a flashback, and they run into Begbie's father. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's Robert Carlyle playing the father. And sure enough, it is IMDb. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God.
Because that was the idea. This looks like him.
Right. Yeah. But anyway, so Renton comes back.
I'll go ahead.
And all this takes place in Scotland.
Yes.
And I think the only British character, the only British actor is Johnny Lee Miller. Everybody else is Scottish. Ewan McGregor is Scottish. Ewan Brenner, Robert Carlyle, they're all Scottish. Kelly MacDonald is Scottish.
It's not Scottish. It's crap.
It's crap. And actually, I was watching, I think it was Graham Norton or something, and Ewan Bremmer said that. Ewan Bremmer. Spud.
Oh, Spud.
Yeah. He said that he had only known Johnny Lee Miller as a Scotsman.
Oh, right.
And then they went to the, after the rap party, he started speaking in his British. Yeah. He's like, who the fuck are you? Who are you?
Yeah. And I thought you were going to tell the story about how basically Ewan McGregor and Danny Boyle had a big falling out.
They did.
After Trainspotting.
They did.
They basically essentially hadn't talked for 20 years.
It was I think they did one movie after Trainspotting.
No, it was. It was one movie after, and then Ewan McGregor felt slighted that Danny Boyle didn't have him in the next movie.
Which was The Beach.
Where he had Leonardo DiCaprio.
Well, yeah, I can probably tell you that the reason why Leonardo DiCaprio was in that, because the studio probably said, you gotta have Leonardo DiCaprio in this. Probably.
But Ewan McGregor felt slighted. And they didn't talk for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Until until Danny Boyle started talking about doing this movie again. And, you know, and it's not,
you know what,
it's not that the hatchet wasn't buried necessarily, but they just hadn't talked.
Right. It was also, Ewan McGregor apparently came and, during Slumdog Millionaire, during that 08-09. Danny Boyle said he came and Ewan McGregor came and presented an award to him.
That's right.
And he said he did this great speech, and he said he was crying backstage and stuff. It reminded me a lot about how Tears for Fears got back together, how they didn't talk for years and years and years. And then,
one little thing
that
but they didn't actually talk there. Ewan McGregor thought it's now or never, and then they didn't actually
talk.
That was on the plane. Right afterwards. Right. And they didn't actually talk at that point. But it's great. It's a great story.
Yeah. So, Renton comes back to Scotland. He's been living in Amsterdam, and his mother has passed away, and he goes to see Begbie's in jail.
Begbie has been clearly like that was an shocker. Yeah. He's been incarcerated.
That's what Carlisle said in some interview. He's like yeah, that's where I expected him to
be. He's been incarcerated. Spud, who has been married and has children
with the same girl from the original movie.
From Gale. Yeah.
Because she looks at her hair sounds completely
he's
different.
He's on the outs with his family. He's quit. He started and stopped heroin so many times. He's lost so many jobs. And you find out it's because he's always late.
Right.
Because for better part of 15 years, he didn't know what night and day meant. He was just so
whacked. It was daylight
out of his
savings.
Mind. Yeah.
Daylight savings.
So he didn't understand these concepts. He was like, whatever. So he kept getting fired from jobs.
Right.
So that's Spud. Simon's a con man, essentially. Well, he owns a bar.
He's a pimp too.
He owns a bar, but he's essentially he's trying to turn into a pimp.
Right.
But he's essentially a con
blackmailer.
Man, a blackmailer,
con man.
And he basically is doing anything he can to scrape money together.
Right.
Is what he does.
And now he's addicted to cocaine.
And now he's a cokehead. So yeah. Who does he meets Spud first.
He
goes to Spud first, who is literally on the verge of committing suicide.
Right.
So he kind of saves Spud's life.
Which Spud wasn't too happy about.
Saves Spud's life, and then Simon, of course, finds out that he's back in town and is super pissed.
Oh, no. He goes to the bar, and that's when Simon finds out.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it sound like he didn't, but
right.
Sick Boy finds out he's alive, super pissed off.
Right.
Or not alive, but back.
Right.
Super pissed off. He tries to give him money back. He's like, go fuck yourself. But then Sick Boy.
Oh, he took it.
He took it. But I'm saying he's like,
right.
What the fuck is this? He's like,
right.
There's a narration over. He's like, not even any interest.
Right.
Like, what am I going to do with, £4,000 or no? What was it? Quid?
It was 4,000 pounds.
4,000 pounds now. But he comes up with this plan where he's going to befriend, Renton again.
Right.
Just to fuck him over later.
Right. And Simon/Sick Boy, his girlfriend, sort of, is Veronica, played by Angela Nedyalkova. And she's super hot.
She's an immigrant who is working as a whore.
She's from Bulgaria.
A quote unquote sauna.
Yeah.
And then on the side, Simon is kind of using her to sexually blackmail people by videotaping her with prominent men, or not overly prominent, but just in the community prominent.
And then basically, Begbie gets his parole denied, and then demonstrates why that happened when he tries to attack his lawyer, and then
has a very quick plan to
break out
of jail,
and
which kind of was the one part about this that really fell apart with me. It's like you literally have him staying at his house and the cops haven't showed up to ask about him or talk to
that
him.
Was odd.
Like he literally goes home to his wife and son and stays there, and the cops like never come to the door or anything. Like that was
a little odd. Begbie tries to what happened? How did he find out that Renton was back?
Okay, so he first goes to Renton to get some money or to get a score, maybe it is, and in doing so, not written, I'm sorry. Simon, did I say that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Simon.
So, in doing so, Simon thinks that maybe he can keep Begbie at bay by telling him this fabricated story of, hey, using information he actually knew from Ritten,
right,
that he had been living in Amsterdam, he tells Begbie right. this half-truth of, I heard this story from yeah. someone I know. Guess who they saw in Amsterdam?
Right.
He's living there. Ritten is living right. there. We can go get him. So you just lay low while I develop a plan for us to get there. Right. We can kill him. So he's trying, his plan is to use Ritten for this scheme to make some money.
Right.
And then he'll basically pawn him off onto Begbie and be done with the both of them.
Right.
So that's how that was supposed right. to play out. Then what happens is they're at a bar, and it's so good. They're at a bar. Ritten goes to use the bathroom. Begbie walks in and goes to use the bathroom
stall.
The bathroom stall. He's basically taking some Viagra.
Yeah, because he's impotent.
So anyway, a little scene ensues wherein they have to talk to each other. And they do so, and then, like, it takes 2 seconds, and then each of them's, like, recognizing the other's voice through the stall door, and is like, oh, shit. And Begbie's like, motherfucker. And Ritten's like, oh, shit. And then Begbie, like, leans over the top, and then Ritten runs out.
The chasing's awesome.
Great scene.
It's so great.
It's a good mix, and this is what Danny Boyle's good at. It's a good mix for the audience of comedy and the actual thrill of this is...
Yeah, there's a lot more comedy in this, yeah, this I felt.
This one definitely is heavier on the comedy than yeah. the original. That scene is very amped up as well.
Right.
That scene kind of partially plays out in the trailer where Ritten falls over the hood of the car and then yeah. gets up and like gives a little crooked smile and
right.
runs away.
Right.
He's kind of like, I'm back. Like, right, this yeah, is... Yeah. It's almost like... It's a shit life, but it's for him, he feels it's the life he was meant to lead somehow.
Right.
He just doesn't feel himself in any other place
right.
than this Scottish town.
Right. The other thing, though, is, too, like you said that, you know, by the end, he's back in the life. I think the crime part of it, I would say yes. But the drugs part of it, I mean, they did do a hit.
Yeah,
but,
I get the feeling, but
I think based on what he said to Spud, when he says, you got to control it.
Yeah.
I think he has a handle on it.
He just filtered it into crime again, you think?
No, because he does the running and stuff like that. So he said, you got to do something else.
No, I know,
and then
but...
Spud, you know, so he, I don't, based on what I saw in the second movie, I wouldn't extrapolate later that he becomes an addict again.
I extrapolated that simply from the very last scene where he's literally living in his house again and he kind of you could certainly see it anyway,
right.
but I almost saw it as him dissolving into another hallucination at the end when mm-hmm. he's dancing around his room and it just starts panning out mm-hmm. into like this whole, almost like a train moving like that.
Right, right.
And I took that as to him hallucinating again.
Oh, see, I didn't take it like that. I just thought it was just a visual thing that Danny Boyle.
Because I took it as a regression,
right? I didn't see.
It'd be
it like
interesting
that.
To know what Danny Boyle actually meant by that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is based on. Apparently, this has scenes from the original Trainspotting novel. The novel.
Oh, did the novel delve into?
No. Because the other thing is that. There was Irving Welsh did Trainspotting the novel, and then John Hodge, who worked with Danny Boyle a lot, he wrote the screenplay for Trainspotting. He also wrote the screenplay right. for the second one.
And you that things like that you can tell because you can tell that it was so seamless that the same person,
yeah,
you know, worked on both, and things like that mean something when you were filming a movie.
Welsh, though, apparently, because I think Danny Boyle said it in, I was watching a short little documentary thing that interviewed them and stuff like that. I don't think there is a Trainspotting 2 novel, but he did do a novel that took place 10 years later.
Oh, okay.
I think it was called Porno.
And part of that was what?
And I think part of that, and then part of scenes from, that they didn't use in Trainspotting sure. were combined by John Hodge. Yeah. And then Danny Boyle said he thought that John Hodge added in a lot of his own personal stuff in there, like about aging and stuff like yep. that. And, you know, so, and I think he combined all together. We didn't talk about Spud, really.
Let's talk about that, because he's pretty much the main arc of this movie.
Yeah.
It's a great arc.
It is. Yeah. Spud, Renton tells Spud, you don't need to get the drugs out of your body. You need to get the drugs out of your mind. He says, so you're an addict. What you have to do is you gotta focus that on something else.
You gotta be an addict to something else.
So Renton runs. That's what he does now. He runs. And he said to Spud, you know, some people try boxing. So there's a real funny scene when he goes to try and box.
Just one punch and he's out. He's like, oh, okay.
And then he kind of has like a flashback because he's on the same street that they were on, I guess, at the end of the movie, the first one. And he has a flashback to them, the younger versions of them running by him. And so what he starts to do, he buys a bunch of legal pads, and he just starts writing down his stories.
Yeah, but not only does he have the flashback, but he's triggered to do that by Veronica, who says, you tell great stories.
Yeah.
You should write these down.
That's true, too. But I thought he was doing that before.
No, he didn't buy the legal pads till after he talked to her. He wasn't writing this stuff down until after he talked to her. He may have jotted stuff down on like napkins or something like that, but he didn't have it's hard to call it a system. I mean, he just writes stuff down. But he didn't have his own little system until after he talked to her. That's when he got the idea. That sparked him the idea.
Right.
Which, the irony of that is that, you know, whether or not she planned on it all along, like in reading some of his stories.
Yeah, maybe.
That's possibly what gave her the idea in the end
to dig
them all over.
So he starts writing, and that's what he channels his addiction into.
Yeah.
And he basically writes all the stories that they live through. And the implication is that he will take that, I guess, and get it published or something like that. Or find some way.
I think it was a more personal reason. Right? He said, he just wanted his family to be able to
that's true. Right? Yeah,
right?
That's true.
And then he went and delivered it to his wife and
right.
son in the end. And,
right.
and she's like, oh, you could tell this story. And that's kind of how the movie actually ends, right?
Right.
So you get the idea that he may be okay and get back together with his family. And,
yeah, maybe.
And, you know, but yeah. So, you know, yeah, he writes these stories down. And that's actually writing the stories down is how Begbie finds out that he got the money.
Yeah.
20 years earlier. And then that's also kind of triggered Begbie, fueled his fire a little bit more because he had a lot of bad stories about Begbie.
Right, yeah.
So
and that, yeah, that kind of has, he, I wouldn't so his say, catharsis, I wouldn't say,
his catharsis, yeah, it's not like it leads to the downfall because it's kind of all going there anyway.
Right.
But it definitely triggers the path.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Begbie has like a change of heart.
But he does have at least a moment with his son and his wife.
Yeah,
he does
yeah.
have a moment to reflect where
right.
he says he's essentially almost like a opposite of written, but he's essentially saying, I know who I am.
Right.
I'm not going to change. But I want you to be better.
Right.
You can be better. You can be better than me and my father.
Right.
And it's almost best that you not see me anymore.
Right.
So he has this small moment with his family before right. going back and being a maniacal, crazy son of a bitch again.
Yeah.
Because you almost think at that point, oh, maybe he won't try to kill him.
No, that's not true.
No. And then even at the end, I was thinking like, oh, is he going to try to pull him down because he realizes? No, he's literally just trying.
Yeah, yeah,
just,
yeah. Oh, you mean hold him up?
Hold him up.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You're like, oh,
no,
maybe
no,
he's
no.
going to try to help him now. No,
no he's trying to murder him.
He's trying to murder. Straight up murder.
Yeah, that was fucked up.
But no, that was a great scene too because at the end, the kind of the crossroads scene where Begbie catches up with Renton, and Renton is in this box that's all filled with glass because
right.
it was. They were renovating this house. It was going to be used for their own little quote-unquote sauna.
Yeah, it was the upstairs of Sick Boy's Bar.
Right. So they were going to use that as a business venture together.
Right.
And so one of the rooms, it's like a little dance room, a private little dance room they're making.
Right.
And it's completely filled with glass. And it's very metaphorical because he's trapped in this box looking at himself.
Right.
And having a conversation with Begbie on the other side. Right. It's almost like 20 years hasn't passed.
Right, yeah.
You know, I don't know how much the movie, he lives. Begbie goes back to jail. Simon is kind of left to his own devices. He's right. Running the bar again.
Well, the thing that happens for the two of them is that they have basically reconciled their friendship.
That's true. Yeah. They're at least friends again. And the money was taken out of it because they had gotten this, like, call it a small business loan, if you will.
Right.
And Veronica basically steals that money. Because she found out through one of Spud's stories that he could essentially, he was essentially a forger. She uses him to forge the papers to sign over all the money to her. Mm-hmm. She goes back to Bulgaria.
Yeah, Bulgaria.
To meet her family.
You find out she has a kid. Right.
And so she was doing what she could. She was likely there to get money to bring her kid over or something like that.
Right.
And so Spud does that. Runs in to tell him he's sorry, and that's when it comes into a head with Begbie, who shows up. But it ends up Spud going back to his family. You don't know where everything's going to end,
right?
But why would you? This should never be that close.
But there's a lot more hope at the end of this movie than there was in the original.
High hopes.
Nice.
Yeah. So, well, there's hope on his side. Simon, at least there's.
I would say. I mean, I still think that there's hope for the others as well. Well, not Begbie.
Begbie's hopeless. Sick Boy and Renton. Maybe hope for the drugs, but they are certainly of the criminal element. That's what I'm saying.
But I mean, it's kind of like Renton is like, even though he's back home, like there's hope that he's going to kind of, you know. Maybe get his life back together or something.
But the fact that he's so stuck with Sick Boy, and Sick Boy's at best a coke addict.
Right, yeah.
It's hard to believe that's going to happen.
I'm trying to be more optimistic.
I'm a pessimist. but all in all, I mean, it really tells an arc of each character, even though I feel Spuds is certainly the most emotional and telling of the four.
Yeah.
But it really does kind of tied all of the characters up and the stories up very nicely. You didn't feel like this didn't need to be told or this was shoehorned together.
It's very organic. It's a very natural extension of the story.
I really enjoyed it. It was really good.
So definitely if you've seen Trainspotting and you know what, I guess.
Heck, you don't necessarily need
and to. I was just going to say that you could go into this cold because they pretty much recap everything that happened.
Because look, I haven't seen Trainspotting in 15 years.
Right.
Now granted, I saw it a few times back then, but it's been a long time and I fell right back into it. And I tried to be as objective as I could. It's like, could I watch this movie if I hadn't?
And they pretty much could retell enough.
Yeah. That you would get the idea of the backstory.
Right, yeah. Right. So, definitely check out Trainspotting 2. There were literally three people in the theater when I saw it.
Yeah, same with me. But I saw it at like 10 in the morning, so...
I saw it at 1:05, but granted, it was Easter, so...
Yeah. But I was very impressed with this one. Very happy. It was good.
Yeah. It was really good. And Gifted, catch that on...
For free.
Cable or Blu-ray or whatever.
Yeah, it's fine for a rental. It's
the same. Next episode, not sure. Not sure what we're going to talk about. Maybe we'll do a little summer preview, maybe. Yeah, I don't know, maybe. Because it's getting to be about that time. Guardians of the Galaxy is in, 3 weeks?
Yeah. Which we didn't mention, I don't think. It just announced James Gunn is writing and will direct the third
one. Oh, yeah. So, there you go. Why don't you wait to see it when the returns come in first, you assholes? There's no guarantee there's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Yes, yeah, right. This movie's going to make a shit ton of money.
I can't wait for it. I'm super excited.
It looks great. But yeah, we will see you next time. Thanks for listening, folks.